Italian Weekly Podcast. I'm BICOM CEO James Serene. I'm delighted to have with us today Lahav Harkov, who's a senior contributing editor of the Jerusalem Post. Lahav, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
So if we could start off by just, you know, thinking about what the reaction was in Israel to Benny Gantz's series of interviews last night. I think this was the first time that he's really done an extensive round of nighttime TV interviews. We saw a lot of Benny Gantz, and he was asked quite a lot of questions. I just wanted to get your take on what you think that's done to his candidacy. Does he come out stronger? Does he look like he didn't have any firm answers to some of Israel's big problems? What was your take on it?
I don't think that this is going to be like a huge turning point in the election season or the election campaign. He seemed defensive. I don't think that he was particularly successful in sort of relaying a message of what kind of leader he's going to be and what he wants to do as prime minister. And, you know, this was his chance. I mean, I think that it was a big chance for him to try to sort of turn things around, because there's sort of a downward trend for his party in the polls. And I don't think that he did a bad job in the interviews. It's not, you know, he didn't come out, it looked, being embarrassed in any way. There weren't any gaffes or anything, but I just don't think that he came out strong.
So do you think that's a quite a big missed opportunity? Because it was a moment for him really to try and change the course of what looks like a bit of a slide in the polls. He could have, you know, maybe set the agenda with something a bit more interesting. And do you see that as a bit of a missed opportunity that he didn't do that?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a missed opportunity. I think, you know, in part it's because of the questions he was asked, but a skilled politician knows how to say whatever they want, regardless of what journalists ask them, much to the frustration of us journalists. And he didn't manage to do that. That's sort of why I was saying he was on the defensive, because I think that, you know, when you ask the tough questions, right, a lot of it are the sorts of things that Netanyahu would prefer we focus on, like the hacking of his phone.
Yeah.
Like the sort of confused nature of the party's positions and platforms and things like that.
Was there anything that was surprising for you about what he said, either about security or what he said about maybe talks with the Palestinians, or anything that you thought gave you a glimpse that he's trying to offer a slightly different vision to what Israel has seen before?
You know, I was more surprised by how similar it just kind of sounded to Likud in a lot of ways. You know, Likud keeps accusing Gantz's party of being left. And I, as a journalist, know the positions of a lot of people in his party very well. I know, you know, everyone who comes from Yesh Atid, which is about half of them. And I know a lot of these people have just been active in the political sphere for a long time. And there really are quite a few people on the list who I would categorize as left. But when you listen to what Gantz says, he's maybe, you know, 2 inches to the left of Likud, including on the Palestinian issue. He didn't talk about a Palestinian state. He just talked about sort of, you know, being open to negotiations, being open to regional talks, which has long been a talking point of Lapid's. But I wouldn't say that it's a particularly left-wing or right-wing position. It's just a, you know, just a slightly different way of looking at things. But he never talked about a Palestinian state. And he specifically said that there's no partner on the other side, which is, I would say, something that the right says in Israel. The left doesn't say that. And the center, you know, if we consider Lapid to be, he's been the center for the past 6 years in Israel, that's Lapid's talking point.
But he said this line that was quite intriguing about saying Israel has a moral obligation to strive for peace, which would kind of imply that if you're not striving for peace, then it's immoral. I mean, did you see that language as maybe hinting at something of a slightly different direction?
I think that that's a good point. I think it's something that maybe sometimes people forget to talk about, including on the right, because I think on all sides of the political spectrum, if you ask people, they would rather have peace than war. With the exception of Otzma, which I happen to read their platform very thoroughly for an article, and they want war. But that is, you know, as opposed to everyone else. Back to Gantz, I would say, you know, he says it, but then everything else he says, I wouldn't say it's anti-peace. It's just a sort of skepticism that I think reflects the position of many Israelis, where they say we would like peace, but we just don't see how it's going to happen anytime soon.
Did he say anything about settlements? I didn't see it in some of the reports I saw. Was there any detail on that?
I don't think that anyone asked him that. I could be wrong. Okay. There's like, you know, it's like three different interviews and they all sort of melted in my brain into one memory.
so linking on from that, and you said you talked there about Otsma, one of the right-wing parties. I mean, I think some of the analysts over the last week have been looking at how the positions changed in the polls. And we've definitely seen a change in the trend where, you know, the blue and white party is not predicted to win as many seats. There's even some polls that had Likud edging it against them and sort of back in the lead. But part of the story of whether there can be a Likud-led coalition after the election is about the relative success of those small right-wing parties. And I wanted to get your thoughts on
it. Yeah.
So what do you think is happening there? Because, you know, a few weeks ago, we weren't talking about Zehut getting into the Knesset. People were saying that Yisrael Beiteinu may not make it into the Knesset. Now we're looking at a situation where there could be as many as four right-wing parties, United Right, the New Right, Zehut and Yisrael Beiteinu, all making it into the Knesset. So what do you think is going on there?
So first of all, I would say, you know, the polls are very shaky in Israel. There's so many different parties. And so we don't know for sure. I think the polls are stronger as an indication of trends. And so the right is trending well. Likud is trending well. I wouldn't like give a solid prediction now for what's going to happen in 3 weeks. But using the information we have now, using the polls we have now, I think that, first of all, that blue and white is losing people on the right. In part, I guess, because the message that they're left wing is sticking, mm-hmm. in part because they've put out an actual platform, and I guess a lot of people on the right aren't happy with it. I think actually that their big union connection has damaged them. There was a strike on the trains in Israel, and the head of the National Labor Union is number five on their list. And I think that that was a point that really stuck with a lot of Israelis, which is something that you sort of don't hear about a lot outside of Israel.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do have a National Labor Union, and there are, you know, a few strikes here and there throughout the year that really disrupt people's lives. And so people who aren't union members tend to not like the unions. So I think that some people from the right sort of moved on over to the other side. And, you know, if they were reluctant to vote for Netanyahu, and so that's why they were voting for Gantz, then maybe they're not going to Likud. Maybe they're going to the New Right. Maybe they're going to Zehut, even though Zehut was passing the threshold in previous weeks as well. But Yisrael Beiteinu also is actually, you know, people call them far right because they do employ very harsh rhetoric against Israel's minorities. But a lot of their policy positions on sort of more, I guess, social and economic issues are not that far off from Lapid's when it comes to especially secularism. Could be that.
And what about Zehut? I mean, all of a sudden people are talking about, you know, legalizing marijuana. Is this because, like, Moshe Feiglin, he's done there's something interesting about that message that's appealing with Israelis, this kind of, you know, libertarian right that is sort of very libertarian on social issues, but sort of very right wing on sort of conflict issues? How do you see that?
I can say that, like, my sort of social bubble, which personally, you know, as a journalist, I try to get out of my social bubble and to see the wider picture of society. But what I wrote about Zehut, I was sort of able to turn inwards because my social bubble is sort of modern Orthodox people from English-speaking countries. And I think that Zehut has a huge appeal in that particular sector. I see a lot of people who are sort of right-wing, and right-wing in a way that is not the standard right-wing in Israel, because the right-wing in Israel includes a lot of sort of economic populism. And certainly a lot of Americans who consider themselves right-wing would like smaller government, less government intervention in various areas, less government spending. And those are all things that Zehut represents, you know. And then there is the cannabis element, which I did sort of a deep dive on Friday's Jerusalem Post, and you can find it online about Zehut. And a lot of people really are for legalizing cannabis. More than a quarter of Israelis smoke cannabis or have smoked cannabis. And so it's a popular enough position. It's hard for me to say whether it's a position that's worth an entire seat in the Knesset, but the Green Leaf Party, which is a party dedicated solely to this issue, has come close to passing the threshold in the past. And they aren't running this time, in part because their leadership said other parties are sort of carrying this mantle more effectively than they are.
So they've scooped that up. That's very interesting. And so final question I really want to just talk about is what you think has, and we touched on it a little bit, whether, you know, big rise in support for the Blue and White Party, which we saw, you know, after the Attorney General's announcement where they were predicted to win as many as 37 seats. Now it's much lower. Do you think we're just going to continue to see that slide? Do you think that they've kind of missed, they've kind of rode a bit of a wave and that's just now flattened out? What's your view on that?
I do think that their campaign is a little bit of a mess and their sort of mixed messages are not helping them. They're trying now once again to bank on sort of anti-Netanyahu sentiment, because clearly, you know, when things are bad for Netanyahu, it helps them. It remains to see sort of further polling to see if that really works for them. It's possible. I would say the way they need to win is to bring in votes from the right. And most polling to this point has shown that the right basically likes Netanyahu, so attacking him a lot doesn't help. And that's why you see other right-wing parties don't attack Netanyahu, and they all talk about how they're going to be in Netanyahu's government. It's not because they're also enamored of Netanyahu, it's because they realize that's what their voters want, that they want to feel like they're voting for two people at once. They want to feel like they're voting for, I don't know, Naftali Bennett and Bibi, or Arya Dery and Bibi.
I mean, one of the most striking things is that we've been tracking the favorability poll of like preferred prime minister, and that Bibi's rating of being a preferred prime minister over Gantz actually increased significantly after the attorney general made his announcement about the indictment. So he went up by something like 5%. So it seems like some of this corruption stuff, it doesn't really stick. Is that your sense?
It's not even that it doesn't stick. It feeds into a feeling that a significant portion of Israelis have of, you know, I really hate to use this expression, but I think people understand it, of like the deep state, you know, of this idea that these people who, and I don't like using it because it has this like conspiracy theory implication to it, but I think it's an idea that's taken hold in Israel that the legal establishment of Israel are people who are not elected, you know, especially Supreme Court justices, but also the attorney general and the state attorney, that these are all people who are not elected, and yet they have a huge amount of power over what happens here. And you hear it in the rhetoric on the right. I mean, again, they wouldn't be repeating these messages so often if they didn't work. And I've been doing this now for 8 years, reporting on Israeli politics, and I've seen how this message has managed to take root. You know, there were a few people saying it 8 years ago, but now it's like every right-wing party is saying it practically.
Well, Lahav, thank you very much. It's been a really good analysis there, and it's going to be a fascinating campaign for the next 3 weeks or so. So I look forward to speaking to you again. But for now, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.